Hello and welcome to Columbia Evangelical Seminary's class, Writing Protocols, where we will be covering punctuation, grammar, and academic style. This is Lecture 1. My name is Rick Walston, and I'll be your audio professor. The year is 2005. Lecture 1, Sentences, Clauses, and Punctuation. Please take the time to read the syllabus, and there you will find the two texts that are required for this class, a manual for writers of term papers, theses, and dissertations, by Kate L. Turavian. Now, typically, this book is referred to by simply the author's last name. So throughout these lectures, you'll hear me referring to Turavian. This is the book I'm referring to. And then Working with Words, a handbook for media writers and editors. If you don't have these books, you need to stop the lecture now, go to your local bookstore and order them, or order them through a bookstore online. Page 2 of the lecture. Sometimes CES Writing Protocols disagrees with Turavian. When that happens, you're supposed to follow CES writing protocols. For example, in Turavian, she says, in sentences containing two or more independent clauses joined by a coordinating conjunction, and, but, or, nor, for, a comma is placed before the coordinating conjunction. This is not a hard and fast rule, however. Where the sentence is short and clarity is not an issue, no comma is needed. This is where CES writing protocols disagrees with Turavian. Our style is that it is a hard and fast rule. In other words, in CES writing protocol style, when sentences containing two or more independent clauses are joined by a coordinating conjunction, a comma is always placed before the coordinating conjunction, even if the sentence is short and clarity is not an issue. The example that Turavian gives for her statement is this, quote, John arrived early and Mary came an hour later. Certainly this is a short compound sentence and there's no problem with clarity. However, according to CES writing protocols, this sentence is a run-on sentence and it's wrong. And it will be considered wrong and graded accordingly on your papers. According to the CES writing protocol style, her sample sentence must have the comma before the coordinating conjunction. It would look like this, quote, John arrived early, comma, and Mary came an hour later, unquote. So you might consider this nitpicky, but I guarantee you, unless we have a consistent style for the students and for the faculty, grading can be difficult. So we're going to do the correct way, and the comma before the coordinating conjunction there is the correct way. Now, page 3, title there is Grammar Talk. The first thing I want to tell you as we move into this is that you need to develop your own vocabulary list. You need to take notes, and I don't mean notes as in writing out full-length sentences according to my lecture, because that's what these notes that you're reading are for. But what I want you to do is write down key words, words that you will develop your vocabulary list from. For instance, we're going to be talking on this page, page 3, we're going to be talking about the sentence, clauses, independent clause, dependent clause, subordinate clause, and subordinating conjunction. So there's just a few words right there on this page that you should write down and write down their definitions. So, moving on from there, you know your first assignment is to start building your vocabulary list. So, if you don't have a pen and paper in hand, grab it, get ready to start writing down key words. The first thing we're going to deal with is the sentence. Now, I don't want to be offensive to anyone. For those of you who say, man, that's awfully basic, I know what a sentence is, I don't need to be told. Well, there are people that don't know precisely what a sentence is, so we're going to start the basics. Every complete sentence has a subject and a predicate. A predicate is the verb and everything following it in the sentence. Also, every complete sentence may have just a subject and a verb. For instance, he left is a complete sentence, he being the subject, left being the verb. She cried, he ran, etc. But typically, sentences that are longer than just the two words have then the subject and the predicate. For example, created the heavens and the earth is the predicate in the sentence, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, Genesis 1:1. Or for example, gave birth to his brother Abel is the predicate in the sentence, later she gave birth to his brother Abel, Genesis 4:2. So that's a sentence. A sentence has a subject and a predicate. And the predicate is the verb and everything following it. Clauses. A clause has a subject and a verb. The fact that a clause has a subject and a verb separates it from a phrase. A phrase is two or more words in sequence that form a syntactic unit, but it's less than a sentence. Now, there's two basic types of clauses, the independent clause and the dependent clause. The independent clause is a sentence that has a subject and a predicate, and it can stand alone. It's a complete thought. The dependent clause, however, typically cannot stand alone. It is not a complete thought. There are two types now of dependent clauses, the subordinate clause and the relative clause. A subordinate clause begins with a subordinating conjunction. Here are some examples of subordinating conjunctions, and again, this is a word that you should be writing down for your notes, for your vocabulary list, subordinating conjunction. And here are some sample subordinating conjunctions, although, because, after, as, while, if, since, when, whether, and until. Here is a sample of the if used in a sentence. If you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, comma, you will go to heaven when you die. Now, note this. A subordinate clause, like the independent clause, has a subject and a predicate, but it has something that the independent clause does not have. It has a subordinating conjunction. This keeps it from standing alone. So, the dependent clause has a subject and a predicate, and the dependent clause has a subject and a predicate, and a third thing, and that is the subordinating conjunction. The subordinating conjunction is what causes the dependent clause to be dependent upon the rest of the sentence to make sense, and thus the dependent clause cannot stand alone. Then there's the relative clause. The relative clause begins with a relative pronoun. Examples of relative pronouns are who, what, that, and which. Here's a sample of a relative clause in a sentence. The one who died for my sins is Jesus Christ. Thus, who died for my sins is the relative clause. Now, there are three kinds or categories of sentences: the simple, the complex, and the compound. The simple sentence has one subject and one predicate. For example, God loves his children. Loves his children is the predicate. God, of course, is the subject. Then the complex sentence has one or more dependent clauses and one independent clause. Example, before Adam sinned, comma, he lived in the Garden of Eden. Notice the before. The word before is a subordinating conjunction, setting up a dependent clause, and at the end of that subordinate clause or that dependent clause, you must have a comma. Then the compound sentence has two or more complete sentences joined by a coordinating conjunction and a comma. Examples of coordinating conjunctions are and, but, for, nor, or, yet, and so. Here's an example of a compound sentence. Adam lived in the Garden of Eden, comma, and God walked with him. Coordinating, as in coordinating conjunction, means of equal rank. When a coordinating conjunction is connected, or is connecting two separate, when a coordinating conjunction is connecting two complete sentences, you always need a comma before the coordinating conjunction. Now, this is very important. Again, let's read that. When a coordinating conjunction is connecting two complete sentences, and that's the key. It's not just whenever you see a coordinating conjunction in a sentence. It's when the coordinating conjunction is connecting two complete sentences. Then you always need a comma before the coordinating conjunction. However, there is no comma before a compound subject, before the coordinating conjunction in a compound subject or verb. Example, Bob and Mike. You wouldn't put Bob, comma, and Mike, because Bob and Mike is simply a compound subject here. It's not the word and is not joining two complete sentences. It's joining just simply two names. So Bob and Mike went to the woods and shot their game. Again, notice there's no comma before the and in the second part of the sentence either. Bob and Mike is the compound subject, and went and shot is simply the compound verb. So you put a comma before the coordinating conjunction when the coordinating conjunction is connecting two complete sentences, but not when it's simply connecting two items. Now, you can also use a semicolon to take the place of both the comma and the coordinating conjunction in the connecting of two or more complete sentences. Example, Adam lived in the Garden of Eden, semicolon, God walked with him. Example with a conjunction, Adam lived in the Garden of Eden, comma, and God walked with him. But note, you do not use the semicolon with the coordinating conjunction. If you use the semicolon, then you should not have the coordinating conjunction there. All right, next thing is that there are four functions of sentences. Or in other words, what do sentences do? They do four things. There's declaratory sentences, imperative sentences, exclamatory sentences, and interrogative sentences. Now, the declaratory sentences simply state something. They declare something, and they take a period. For instance, God is good, the Bible is the Word of God, and Jesus is Lord. They simply make a statement of fact. Number two, imperative sentences command. They give a command, and they sometimes take a period or an exclamation point. For example, then Peter said, look at us, in Acts 3:4b. Next one, in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, walk. Now notice one takes an exclamation point and the other one did not. It's the intent of the writer that determines whether or not to put in the exclamation point or not. Now exclamatory sentences exclaim or excitedly proclaim something and they do take an exclamation mark. For example, he has risen, exclamation point. Thomas said to him, my Lord and my God, exclamation point. Now, typically, in academic papers, however, you won't need to worry about exclamatory sentences because you are not to use exclamation points in an academic paper. Why? Because exclamation points typically show excitement or that kind of emotional outburst, and that's not your job in an academic paper. Your purpose is to simply state and defend your case and to argue your case, not to argue it with a raised voice. We'll talk more about the exclamation point later when we get into punctuation. And then number four, the interrogative sentences simply ask questions and end with a question mark. However, it's not uncommon for people to put question marks after normal declaratory sentences. Recently, I got an email from a pastor who was asking about the possibility of receiving credit for his years of ministry. He wrote, I am just wondering if you give credit for ministry experience? Question mark. I've been in ministry for 15 years? Question mark. Now, obviously, in his mind, he was asking about the possibility of getting credits, but neither sentence was an interrogative. Each of them was a declaratory, and each required a period at the end, not a question mark. The way that he wrote the first line, you'd think that he was asking me if he had been wondering about this or not. See, he wasn't asking me if he had been wondering. He was simply telling me that he had been wondering about whether or not we give credit for ministry experience. So it's a simple declaratory sentence, I have been wondering. You wouldn't put a question mark after that. And if you give credit for ministry experience, it's simply the dependent clause here. And this just simply says he's been wondering about something. So it should take a period, not a question mark, because he's not really asking me any question. And same with the second one. It looks like he's been asking me if he's been in ministry for 15 years. So be very careful not to put a question mark at the end of a declaratory sentence. Also, be sure to use a period at the end of a direct or at the end of an indirect question. Examples of that: the teacher asked why Robert had left the room before the class was over. Now, some people might want to put a question mark there. It doesn't belong there. A period belongs there because it's not a question. It's a statement talking about what the teacher had asked. It wasn't actually asking the reader anything. The next one, my teacher used to wonder why no one was on time to class. Again, no question mark. It's a statement of what the teacher had been wondering about. Now, the reverse often happens as well. People will often write an interrogative sentence and end it with a period. But here's a couple of examples of interrogative sentences. Can anything good come from Nazareth? How do you know me? Nathaniel asked. How can this be? Nicodemus asked. So be careful to use the correct punctuation at the end of the sentence that you have written. Page 6, restrictive and non-restrictive clauses. Now this can get a little hard to remember, so I would really suggest that you make flashcards and, you know, like little 3x5 cards and put them in your pocket, and when you're sitting around waiting for something to do, or if you're in the doctor's office or whatever, you can pull it out and study this and memorize this. When to use commas with restrictive and non-restrictive clauses. Now, concerning restrictive and non-restrictive clauses, it's all about the comma. A restrictive clause is a clause that is necessary to properly understand the sentence. A non-restrictive clause is a clause that is not necessary to properly understand the sentence. It may be added information for the sake and the benefit that the reader wants to give the writer wants to give the reader a little bit more information, but it's not necessary information. Let's use Bob and his kids as our example here. A restrictive clause and a non-restrictive clause would look like this. Restrictive. Bob's child, Cindy. Now, in these two sentences, Cindy, the name Cindy, is our restrictive clause, or non-restrictive clause, depending on how we're using it. Restrictive. Bob's child, Cindy, bought a new car. Now, when one writes this way and does not put commas around the name Cindy, the author or the writer of this line is telling us that the name Cindy is necessary information for us to determine who bought the car. But a non-restrictive clause would be like this: Bob's youngest child, comma, Cindy, comma, bought a new car. Now, go back to the restrictive for a minute. Why would her name be necessary information for us to know who bought the car? Because we're differentiating Cindy from Bob's other children. So the mere absence of these commas around Cindy's name tells us that Bob has more than one child, and it's his child Cindy who bought a new car. But Bob's youngest child, Cindy, notice now there's commas around the name Cindy. Why are there commas around the name Cindy? Why is Cindy unnecessary in this sentence? Because Bob can only have one youngest child. And it doesn't really matter what her name is, but if he puts the name in, then you have to put it in commas to show that it's superfluous and unnecessary information, but it's just added there for your benefit to know what Bob's youngest child's name is. Now, when you're using restrictive and non-restrictive clauses, and they begin with the word that or words that or which, then you want to make sure to use that and which correctly. You should always introduce the restrictive clause with the word that and the non-restrictive clause with the word which. For example, restrictive clause, the cake that had cherry frosting was delicious. Now notice that had cherry frosting is the clause. It's restrictive. In other words, it's necessary information. Because it does not have the commas around it, we know it's necessary information. And when we introduce the restrictive clause, we use the word that. Notice the next one, non-restrictive clause. The cake, comma, which had cherry frosting, comma, was delicious. Now here's another point. You should be able to take out, if you put something in commas like this, you're setting them up. It's called a parenthetical note. Even though it's not in parentheses, it's in commas, it's still called a parenthetical note. When you have a parenthetical note, that means you can remove that information because it's unnecessary, remember. It's just superfluous information. And the sentence should still make sense. And it does. The cake was delicious. So when you put the commas around a clause, that means you should be able to take that clause out of the sentence and the sentence should still make sense. Now, the restrictive clause in the first sentence is introduced by the word that and is not set off by commas. This indicates that the writer was aware that his reader needs more information to help him determine which cake, notice there is more than one cake, which cake was being spoken of, and that the added information about the frosting is vital and necessary information for him to see which cake is the right one. Perhaps in this context of the restrictive clause, there are three cakes, and the writer wants his reader to know which of the three is the best tasting one. Now, the non-restrictive clause in the second sentence is introduced by the word which. Now, one of my teachers said we all have to become witch hunters in our writing, because often we will put the word which when we really should be putting the word that. So you should go through your writing and look for the word which and see if you're using it correctly. If you start a non-restricted clause with the word which, then you need those commas around it. Turning on to page 7. You can read the rest of those notes if you like. But turning on to page 7, here's another example of the use of restrictive and non-restrictive clause. My wife Sue, now again the name Sue is going to be the clause in question here. My wife Sue is at the mall. Well, if I do not have commas around the name Sue, what am I telling the reader? I am telling the reader that Sue, as opposed to my other wives, you know, Cindy and Paula or whoever, is at the mall. When the commas are around the name, like in the next sentence, my wife, comma, Sue is at the mall, this tells the reader that there's only one wife and her name is Sue. The first one tells the reader that the person's wife named Sue is at the mall, but because there's no commas around it, it's telling the reader that this is essential information to understand who's at the mall. And if it's essential, and if you're trying to differentiate, then it can only mean one thing, this person has more than one wife. So, you need to learn the restrictive and non-restrictive clauses and when to use the commas and the that and which. Like I said, you might want to make flashcards and go back over that. Moving on now to sentence fragments and run-ons. A sentence fragment is not a complete sentence. For example, the ugliest dog in town, the girl with the light brown hair, the picture on the wall. These are all sentence fragments. They're not complete sentences. Then there are run-on sentences. A run-on sentence is two or more sentences that simply run together without the correct punctuation. Some run-ons are called simple run-ons when they have no punctuation. And a run-on can be called a comma splice if there's a comma attempting to separate two independent clauses. Examples. Here's an example of a simple run-on that has no punctuation. Jack took Sandy to the store. Ted took Johnny to the park. Now, a run-on sentence is two or more sentences that simply run together without correct punctuation. Then the comma splice, or also called the comma fault. Some run-on sentences have what is called a comma splice or comma fault. This happens when a writer uses only a comma to separate the two independent clauses. A comma, remember, by itself is not strong enough to perform this task. A comma cannot join two complete sentences. For example, of a comma splice, look at this. Jack took Sandy to the store, comma, Ted took Johnny to the park. How to correct the comma splice? You would put, Jack took Sandy to the store, comma, and Ted took Johnny to the park. Thus, to separate two independent clauses, you need something stronger than just a comma. You need both the comma and a coordinating conjunction, or you can use a semicolon. Remember, when you use a semicolon, you do not put the coordinating conjunction with it. For example, Jack took Sandy to the store, semicolon, Ted took Johnny to the park. And of course, the last thing you could do is simply put a period after the first sentence and then start the new sentence and start a new sentence. Jack took Sandy to the store, period, Ted took Johnny to the park. All right, general rules of punctuation. This is what I call the always section. Always, always, always. Always place a comma. Are you ready? These are helpful because I like the always stuff. Sometimes when you have the, you can go either way sort of things, it's sometimes difficult to know what to do. But this one, you always place a comma. First one, you always place a comma after three or more words in a series and before and or. For example, Peter, comma, James, comma, and John were there. Now, the Associated Press, which is what you see in your daily newspaper, that's the Associated Press style, or in magazines, popular magazines, the Associated Press style doesn't use the same construction that we use. What they would do is say, Peter, comma, James, and John were there. They would not have a comma after James and before the word, before the coordinating conjunction. I've had students sometimes read this construction in their local daily newspapers or in a magazine, and they question the accuracy of us saying it must have a comma before it. Well, after all, if the professional daily news doesn't do it, why should we? Well, because AP style is not academic style. Academic style, which is what we do, calls for the comma before the coordinating conjunction, and in fact, it is correct. So once again, when you have a series of three or more words, elements, or phrases, now note we added a little bit something different here. When you have a series of three or more words, three or more elements, or three or more phrases, they must be separated by commas, and a comma must be placed before the coordinating conjunction. Examples, I bought bananas, comma, apples, comma, and pears. Peter, comma, James, comma, and John were with Jesus. So be sure to always place your comma before the coordinating conjunction in a series of three or more. Number two, always place a comma after an introductory dependent clause in a complex sentence. Example, until Jesus returns in the second advent, comma, the church must continue to evangelize the lost. Note that the beginning word, until, is a subordinating conjunction. When an introductory clause begins with a subordinating conjunction, it is a dependent clause and must have a comma at the end of it. That is why there is a comma at the end of the dependent clause in this sentence. The dependent clause is until Jesus returns in the second advent. Remember what makes the clause dependent? It's not a complete thought. Note what happens when we reverse these two clauses. The church must continue to evangelize the lost until Jesus returns in the second advent. Now there's no comma here. Why? Because at the end of the dependent clause now, there is a period. And contrary to popular misconceptions, you do not place a comma before the dependent clause. So this would be wrong. The church must continue to evangelize the lost, comma, until Jesus returns in the second advent. So you would remove that comma. All right. Number three. Always place a comma before the coordinating conjunction connecting two or more independent clauses. Now, we talked about this a little earlier, but this is another one of those always things, so let's go back over it. The light shines in the darkness, comma, but the darkness has not understood it. Here's another one. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, comma, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already. Now, notice, when you have a coordinating conjunction connecting two complete sentences, you must have a comma before that coordinating conjunction. Two more examples. The man ate the entire bucket of chicken, comma, and then he got sick. Now note the next one, though. The man ate the entire bucket of chicken and got sick. No comma. Why is there no comma in the second one? Because in the second one, what follows the coordinating conjunction is not a complete sentence. Then got sick is not a complete sentence. But above that, then he got sick is a complete sentence. So we did not repeat the subject in the second clause. Therefore, this is not a the second clause in the second one is not a an in, it's not an independent clause. So therefore, there's no comma before the and. So note that very clearly. Number four, always place a comma around non-essential, non-restrictive words, phrases, and clauses, which of course is what we talked about earlier. Which always introduces a non-restrictive clause and needs commas. That always introduces a restrictive clause and no commas are needed. Example, Bob's dog, comma, which barks constantly, comma, is 3 years old. This is a unnecessary clause. It needs commas to show you that it's an unnecessary information. Remember what I said, when you put commas around the clause, that means you can remove the clause and it'll still make sense. Bob's dog is 3 years old. Now notice the next one though, the clause in question begins with the word that. Bob's dog that barks constantly is 3 years old. No commas here. Note the only difference here is in the use of the word which or that. It shows what the author's intent is. In the first sentence, using a non-restrictive clause, the author signifies that Bob has only one dog. In the second sentence, the author signifies that Bob has more than one dog, and it is the one that is constantly barking that is 3 years old. Page 10. Always place a comma after an introductory participial phrase. Examples. Ignoring, by the way, the word ignoring is our participle, so what begins with the participle then is the participial phrase. Ignoring what they said, comma, Jesus told the synagogue ruler, don't be afraid, just believe. The word ignoring is the participle, and ignoring what they said is the participial phrase. Here's another one. Walking through the park, comma, he found a diamond ring. Now, we'll talk more about participles later if you're not sure what that means, what a participle is. So just hang on, but for the moment, you want to write down participle and participial phrase, and then we'll describe it and define it later as we go in the lectures. Number two, always place a comma after a second introductory prepositional phrase. Example, in the book of Acts, Luke records the growth of the early Christian church. In the book is the first prepositional phrase, and of Acts is the second prepositional phrase. These are joined together to introduce the main clause. So in the book of Acts, comma, notice there's two prepositional phrases. At the end of an introductory two-prepositional phrase, you have to have a comma. Second example, of the men who were at the game, he was the shortest. Of and at are both prepositions, so of the men who were is the first prepositional phrase, at the game is the second prepositional phrase. Now, you do not need a comma after an introductory prepositional phrase with only one preposition. Example, in the book, Luke records that some Christians spoke in tongues. In the book is the first and only prepositional phrase in the sentence, and the comma is not necessary. Now, it's important to note this. In your non-academic writing, you may prefer to place a comma even after an introductory prepositional phrase with only one preposition. This is one of those things where you can do it or not do it according to your own style. If this is your style, that's fine. However, you must be consistent in your style. Thus, do not have a comma at the end of an introductory prepositional phrase with only one preposition in some cases and not in others. However, in your academic writing, that is the writing that you're going to be doing for CES, the rule is that no comma is used after an introductory prepositional phrase with only one preposition unless. Don't you just hate those, the unless, all the exceptions to the rules? Here they are. Unless, one, the introductory prepositional phrase has four or more words in it, or two, the sentence would be confusing without it. Then it does take a comma. Example of four or more words requiring a comma. In his historical narrative, comma, Luke records the growth of the early Christian church. Here's an example of what would be confusing, so therefore it requires a comma. Without Bob Turner and I went fishing. Without Bob Turner? Or without Bob, comma, Turner, and I went fishing. You see how it would be confusing without the comma? So that's when you would use it. Now there's about 150 prepositions in English. Well, I'm not going to list them all, obviously. We use certain prepositions more often than others. In fact, the prepositions of, to, and in are among the 10 most frequent words in English. Here are just a few of some more common prepositions. I won't take the time to read them. You can do that. Look at those and read through those. Number seven, always place a comma after an introductory interjection, an independent element, a direct address. For example, oh, comma, that's the one. No, comma, I will not go. Dave, comma, hand me the Bible. Number 8, always place a comma between coordinate adjectives. Adjectives are coordinate if they can be reversed and if you can insert the word and between them and the sentence still makes sense. Example, the bright, comma, intelligent man was wearing a flashy tie. Can you put the word and between the two adjectives and reverse them, and does it still make sense? The intelligent and bright man was wearing a flashy tie. Yes. You can reverse and insert the and it still makes sense. Therefore, when you have that, then you want a comma between the two. So the bright, comma, intelligent man. You might ask, well, can't I just put the word and in there? Yes, you may. Then there would be no comma. That's what I'm saying. It's either the comma or the and. If you're going to not have the and, then you would put in the comma. Next example, he was a kind, comma, considerate child. Can you reverse those two words? And can you put the word and in? Yes. He was a considerate and kind child. So the reversal and in between them still makes sense. Now, when adjectives are not coordinate, that is, they're not equal, they are called compound adjectives, and they cannot be reversed with the insertion of the word and between them and makes sense. For example, he bought her a diamond-studded ring. Now notice this is diamond hyphen studded, not diamond comma studded. In this case, the adjectives diamond and studded are not coordinate. They're not equal. Thus, you cannot reverse them and put and between them. He bought her a studded and diamond ring. See, that makes no sense. So when you approach the coordinate adjectives, you'll know it's coordinate if you put the and between it. If you reverse the compound adjectives, you'll know the compound because the and doesn't work between them. And when that happens, rather than a comma, that's when you need the hyphen. Now we're moving on to the may section. You may place a comma, and this calls for more of your own style here. In this list, you may but do not have to place a comma. However, you need to select your style and then be consistent with it. You may place a comma after introductory adverbs. For example, suddenly, comma, the band began to play. But you don't have to. You could put suddenly the comma. Suddenly the band began to play, not the comma began to play. Number 2, you may place a comma after 3 short sentences in a series. However, there must be at least 3, and they have to be short, complete sentences. For example, she danced, comma, she laughed, comma, she cried. Now, this is actually a run-on sentence, and it's what's called a comma splice because the commas are not strong enough to separate complete sentences. But because they're very short, 2 words each, and because there are 3 of them, you may use the commas if you desire. Commas make you pause, semicolons make you pause longer, and periods make you stop. So, in the brief sentences, she danced, she laughed, and she cried, it would seem that semicolons or periods would be too heavy. Therefore, commas may be used to separate 3 short sentences. Although it's unlikely in writing, in academic writing, that you'd ever come across 3 short sentences like this anyway. Consistency. The key to the use of the comma in these examples is simply consistency. Choose a style and stick with it. If you are not consistent throughout your paper or your article, your reader will notice it. Inconsistency is the mark of an amateur. Now, when to use a semicolon? Use a semicolon after elements in a series when the elements have commas within them. Again, you use a semicolon after elements in a series when the elements have commas within them. Example, the list of students included the following. Bob Jones, comma, 37, comma, of 1318 Northeast 6th Street. Semicolon. Now that separates us from the next entry. Now the reason why we need semicolons here instead of just another comma is to separate it from each entry, and it's necessary because there's commas inside the elements. Thus, if you just continue to use commas, it would be confusing. You also use a semicolon between independent clauses to show that they are closely related when no coordinating conjunction is present. Now remember earlier I said instead of the coordinating conjunction and the comma, you may place a semicolon there. That's true, but you want to do it only in sentences that are closely related. He himself was not the light, semicolon. He came only as a witness to the light. Notice light is mentioned in both sentences, but a semicolon is used here, not a comma with a coordinating conjunction. For the law was given through Moses, semicolon, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. She danced all night, semicolon, her legs were tired. He turned off the lights, semicolon, the room went dark. Note that the semicolon is used between two complete sentences when those two sentences are so closely related that the second sentence seems to organically grow and arise from the first sentence. Now, when to use a colon? Use a colon after salutations. For example, Dear Dr. Thomas, colon. I've seen letters in which people use a semicolon after the salutation. Semicolons are never correct after salutations. If it's not a formal letter, if it's just a letter to a friend, for example, you can use a comma, Dear Tom, comma. However, you never use a semicolon after a salutation. Number two, use a colon to introduce more than one item. Example, the list of students included the following, and then the colon. And then you have a list of items. Number three, use a colon after an attribution that introduces a direct quotation of two or more sentences. Example, Ralph Thomas said, colon, what follows should be two or more sentences of direct quote from Ralph Thomas. Number four, use a colon between the chapter and verse in a scriptural reference. Example, John 3:16. Also, the traditional method of showing several verses when those verses are consecutive would look like this, John 3:16-21, and not as John 3:16, 21. You see, John 3:16, 21 means that the reference is only to two verses, John 3:16 and 21. If you want to show that it's all verses 16 through 21, then you use the hyphen, not the comma. And then the dash. Now, this is an important one because students often use the dash when they simply don't know what else to do. First of all, there's a difference between the dash and the hyphen. You'll need to know that. The dash is longer, twice as long as the hyphen. And then another consistent error that people make with the dash is that they often put space before and after the dash, but there should be no spaces. Example, the Bible is the best-selling book of all time, space, dash, space, if you can call it just a book. See, this is incorrect. The right way is the Bible is the best-selling book of all time, dash, if you can call it just a book. There's no spaces there. You should use the dash to show dramatic contrast or emphasis. Example, the Bible is the best-selling book of all time, if you can call it just a book. I was eating lunch at precisely 1 o'clock when the house caught on fire. One of my students told me that his motto was, when in doubt, dash. And another one told me that the dash covers a multitude of grammatical sins. Well, that shouldn't be your motto. When in doubt, don't dash. What your motto should be is, when in doubt, look it up. Do not over-dash. Do not use the dash when you don't know what else to do. Find out what is really required there. And the rule of thumb for any academic paper for CES is that you shouldn't use the dash more than twice, no matter how long the paper is. Use a hyphen. How to use a hyphen? The hyphen is not to be confused, as we said, with the dash. Number one, you use a hyphen between compound adjectives. Now, we talked about that just a moment ago. We'll talk about it again quickly here. Adjectives are compound when both or several adjectives cannot stand independently with the noun. Example, he gave her a diamond-studded ring. Remember, we couldn't say a studded and diamond ring, so you put a hyphen between them instead of the comma. Next, Max is a two-year-old dog. Now, another way that can help you understand whether or not to put the hyphens there is you can ask this question. For instance, you can ask, is Max a two dog? No. Is Max a year dog? No. Is Max an old dog? No. So Max is a two-year-old dog. And the three adjectives, two, year, and old, become one sentence, one word, modifying dog. Number two, use a hyphen between adverbs and adjectives unless the adverbs end in ly. Now listen to this again. Use a hyphen between adverbs and adjectives unless the adverb ends in ly. Examples, it is a well-constructed house. Well-constructed house. However, it is a newly constructed house. No hyphen between newly and constructed. One trick to help you remember this rule is this sentence. This is an easily remembered rule. Note that you have the word easily, an adverb which ends in ly, and the word remembered, but there's no hyphen between them. Easily remembered. No hyphen. Why? Because easily is an adverb that ends in ly. So that'll help you remember. Do I put a hyphen here? If this is an easily remembered rule, then you'll remember that that statement and the rule. Also, you do not use a hyphen after the word very. For example, this is a very difficult class. You would not put a hyphen between very and difficult. However, you do use a hyphen between compound adjectives that end in ly. For example, it is a friendly hyphen service gas station, or it is a family hyphen owned business. Okay, that's the difference between the adverbs that end in ly and the adjectives that end in ly. Now recently, I heard an advertisement for a movie in which a cult leader takes control of some kids to do his evil bidding. The announcer on the television said, quote, "See how this cult leader tricked all American kids into following him." And I thought for a second, wow, that's a lot of kids. How could this man trick all kids in America? That would be a lot of kids. Well, this is where the hyphen is very important. This cult leader did not trick all kids in America. Rather, he tricked all hyphen American kids. So the hyphen between these two words changes the phrase from being a phrase about number to being a phrase about essence. Thus, if the announcer's words had been written on the screen, it would have been written like this, quote, "See how this cult leader tricked all hyphen American kids into following him," unquote. All right, how to use periods and commas with quotation marks. Now, this one always humors me because it's really, really, really easy to remember. And for some reason, people still continue to mess it up. Here it is. This line you should memorize. Periods and commas always go inside the quotation marks. It is that simple. Periods and commas always go inside the quotation marks. Example, Bob said, comma, quotation mark, yes, period, quotation mark. Notice that the period is inside the quotation marks. Another example, if I go to the park, comma, quotation mark, Bob said Bob, I am not coming back, period, quotation mark. Notice the comma and the period are both inside the quotation marks. And then another one, the last thing he said was goodbye with the period at the end and then the quotation marks after the period. Always means always. I've told my students over and over that periods and commas always go inside the quotation marks. It's as simple as that. And yet occasionally I'll have a student who will hand in a paper and there will be a period or a comma outside the quotation mark. And I'll ask, did you forget the rule? It's a simple rule. How could you forget it? Always, you know. And one student said, no, I didn't forget it. I just didn't think it applied to this construction. I wanted to ask, what part of always, then, do you not understand? Always means always. Now, most writers in the United Kingdom and in Canada and some other countries place their periods and commas outside the quotation marks. But here in America, we always, always, always place periods and commas inside the quotation marks. Now, there's what I call a pseudo-exception, and that is when you're using a Bible reference and you have the sentence quoted. For example, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. You have that in quotes. And then you have the Bible reference, Genesis 1:1. Then, in that situation, the period goes at the end of your reference. So I call this a pseudo-exception because it's really not an exception. If you ended that sentence, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and didn't have the citation at the end of it, then you would still put the period inside. But when you have the citation of the Bible citation at the end, then of course you want to put the period at the end of that so that you draw that into the full sentence. Now, how do you use question marks, semicolons, and colons within quotation marks? You place question marks and exclamation marks inside or outside the quotation marks depending on whether they are part of the quoted material or not. If they are part of the quoted material, they go inside. If they are not part of the quoted material, they go outside. Examples, when it's not part of the quoted material. Did he really say, I am the best teacher in this school? So in other words, somebody, let's say Bob, told somebody else, I'm the best teacher in this school. That's not a question, it's a statement. And so then this somebody told someone else and then this person repeated back, did he really say, I am the best teacher in this school? Question mark. Now the question mark belongs to the third person in this party. And so the question mark doesn't go inside the quotation marks because the quotation marks indicate what Bob originally said, and he wasn't asking a question, he was making a statement. When it is part of the quoted material, you put it inside. Bob may have asked, do you think I am the best teacher in this school? Then you have a question mark and then the quotation marks. Here's another one, not part of the quoted material. I can't believe she said, you're fat. Part of the quoted material, she screamed, you're fat. You notice where the punctuation goes with regard to the quotation marks, whether it's part of the material, the original quoted material or not. Now you place semicolons and colons outside the closing quotation marks. For example, I had never read Jim Tate's journal article, quote, the truth of time, unquote, semicolon. In fact, I've never heard of it. And then you can see a couple more there examples. All right. What we've done now is gone through lecture one, and you're going to, in a moment, turn off the tape and read the instructions of exercise one and exercise two of lecture one, and you're going to make your corrections, and then you're going to turn the tape back on and listen to my answers. I'm going to give you the answers to all these so that you can test yourself. Now, here's a key. At the end of each lecture, there will be these quizzes. Of course, I will give you the answers so you can check your score. When you can answer all the quizzes from the beginning lecture to the last lecture, when you can answer them all with a 90% or higher, then you're ready to take the final comprehensive exam. If when you take these these quizzes, you're below a 90% accuracy, do not take the exam. Keep working on it until you bring your accuracy rate up to 90% or higher. All right, so now stop the tape and take these and do what you need to do on these two quizzes, and then when you're done, start the tape back up and we'll go through these together. All right, welcome back. I hope that you didn't find the quizzes too difficult and hope you learned a lot from the lecture and you're able to put that together on your answers here. So let's go to lecture. So let's go to exercise one. In the spaces provided, put the appropriate symbols. Also put in the necessary punctuation. Number one, fragment. One of the kindest people I ever met. Simply a fragment. Number two, a dog who eats all day long. Fragment. Number three, because he saw the need, he helped the people move. Complex sentence. Notice the first part of the sentence, the introductory part of the sentence, because he saw the need. What is that? Remember, the because is a subordinating conjunction. Because he saw the need is called a subordinate clause, also called a dependent clause. At the end of a introductory dependent clause, there needs to be a comma. Number four, the team was the best in the league, semicolon, therefore, comma, they won all their games. This is a compound sentence. Now, we didn't cover this before, but notice the word therefore joining two complete sentences. The word therefore is called a conjunctive adverb, and when that appears joining two complete sentences, you need the semicolon before it, therefore, and then the comma. Number five, if you want to know what is true, comma, then you need to study the scriptures. This is a complex sentence. Remember, we need a comma at the end of a dependent clause. The word if is a subordinating conjunction setting up a dependent clause, and that's why you need the comma after the word true. Number six, walking from town to town, never stopping to see where he was exactly. That's a fragment. Number seven, he is the best friend I have ever known, comma, and I don't think I'll ever have a better one. This is a compound sentence. The coordinating conjunction and is joining two complete sentences, and when that happens, you have to have the comma before the and or the but or the whatever coordinating conjunction you're using. Number eight, when the time came for her to dance. That's a sentence fragment. Number nine, at that time he would not play his horn, comma, but now the time was right. Compound sentence. Number 10, Bob hit the ball over the fence. That's a simple sentence. Number 11, he didn't think it would happen, comma, but it did. That's a compound sentence, two complete sentences joined by a coordinating conjunction, commas necessary. Number 12, John bought that car when he was in Texas. Excuse me, this is a complex sentence. When he was in Texas is the dependent clause, and it's at the end of the sentence, so there's no comma after it, obviously, because there's a period there. Number 13, I have seen God heal the sick, so I know he can do it. This is a compound sentence. The punctuation is fine. The word so is a coordinating conjunction, and before a coordinating conjunction that joins two complete sentences, remember, then you need a comma. Number 14, since you left, comma, the people have been sad. This is, the punctuation is correct. This is a complex sentence. Since, you should be learning this by now. Since is what? It is a subordinating conjunction. setting up a dependent clause at the end of an introductory dependent clause is a comma. You might want to write that phrase down, actually. Let me say it again so you can write it down and learn this. Since is a subordinate conjunction, setting up a dependent clause at the end of a dependent clause, introductory, at the end of an introductory dependent clause is a comma. All right, number 15. Although he gave up candy, comma, he still ate ice cream. This also is a complex sentence. It's identical in the construct as the one, number 14 above. Although it's a subordinate conjunction, setting up a introductory dependent clause, comma has to come at the end of it. Number 16, Albert Einstein was a brilliant man, semicolon. However, comma, he didn't know everything, compound sentence. Number 17, Starbucks has the best coffee in the world, simple sentence. Some people disagree with that. I happen to think it's true. Number 18, no big deal. Well, that's a sentence fragment. Number 19, the house was cold because Bob had broken the windows. This is a complex sentence. Where is the dependent clause? Because Bob had broken the windows. The word because is a subordinate conjunction. What do you put at the end of a dependent clause? You put a comma, except when, obviously, it's at the end of the sentence because you the period takes the place of the comma. Number 20, he asked for help but got none. Simple sentence. Number 21, she never thought she was going to the farm. Simple sentence. Number 22, he gulped down a cup of coffee and then got in his car and went to work. See, that's a long one, isn't it? But actually, it's a simple sentence. Why? He is the subject. Gulped, got, and went are just simply the compound verb. He gulped, he got, he went. All of these are simply the compound verb of the subject doing the action. So anyway, it's a simple sentence, no change in punctuation. Number 23, the forest was loud, semicolon, the rivers were roaring. This is a compound sentence. Now, you could have put the forest was loud, period, and then capital T, the rivers were roaring. You could have also put the forest was loud, comma, and the rivers were roaring. Any one of those would have worked, but it is a compound sentence. Next one. She didn't like her job, semicolon. Therefore, comma, she quit. Compound sentence. And then last, 25. He was one of the top professors, which is a simple sentence. All right, let's turn to exercise 2. Punctuate the following sentences correctly. Her husband, comma, Bob, comma, earned his four-year degree. Now, obviously, we put Bob in quotes because in American culture, people are only to have one spouse. So her husband, comma, Bob, earned his four-year degree. Now, what kind of degree was it? Was it a four-degree? No. Was it a year degree? No. It wasn't a year and four-degree. It was a four-hyphen-year degree. All right? So there has to be a hyphen between four and year. Number 2, the black car, which. Now, remember what I said about the word which. It always sets up a non-restrictive clause that needs commas. The black car, comma, which has chrome hubcaps, comma, is Bob's. Number 3, that loud, comma, obnoxious man was in my class. 4, Brad is the best football player I have ever seen, semicolon. He always gives an all-out effort. What kind of effort does he give? An all effort? No. An out effort? No. He gives an all-out, so there has to be a hyphen between all and out. Number 5, Bob was a good, comma, helpful man. Number 6, they moved into their newly constructed house. No change in punctuation. This is an interesting one. Number 7. The boy who returned the money was rewarded. Did you put commas after, and did you put commas around who returned the money? So the boy, comma, who returned the money, comma, was rewarded. Now this is an interesting one because either way is correct. What it boils down to is this. What does the writer intend to say? Now if you are the writer, and when you write, of course, you are the writer, so you get to make that decision whether this is important and essential information or non-important and superfluous information. The boy was rewarded makes perfect sense. It's a complete sentence. Who returned the money could be superfluous information that you're just adding that in there for the reader's benefit. But if you're really saying that it's important for you to understand it was the one who returned the money was rewarded, then you would put no commas. So you can put commas if you don't think it's important. You can put commas, you can put commas if you do not think it's important, or you can take the commas out if you think it's an important information. Number 7, personally, I see it as important information, and I would not put the commas around it. Number 8, she would not turn him over to the police because she loved him. Nothing to do with that one. Sentence is fine. Number 9, the arduous, comma, grueling exam will be difficult to pass. I'm telling you what's going to happen in the final comprehensive exam for this class. It's an arduous and grueling exam. It's a grueling and arduous exam. So it's arduous, comma, grueling. Number 10, Jake's Burger Barn. Okay, first of all, there's a hyphen before the S on Jake's because it's possessive. Jake's, capital B, and capital B on burger and barn. So it's Jake's, Jake hyphen S, capital B burger, capital B barn, was a friendly hyphen service restaurant. Now, remember, friendly is an adjective, not an adverb. If it's an adverb ending in ly, you do not put the hyphen. If it's an adjective ending in ly, you do. Number 11, it was a family-owned business. Again, family is an adjective ending in ly, so you do put the hyphen there. If it's an adverb ending in ly, you would not have. Number 12, he had to pay the out-of-state tuition costs. Well, is that right or is that wrong? What kind of tuition was it? Was it out tuition? No. Of tuition? No. State tuition? No. It's out-of-state, so the hyphens remain. Number 12 is correct the way it is written. Number 13, the captain said, push off. So we need, and it says, and we did. So you need the quotation marks around push off, and you need a comma after off, and the quotation marks go after that. So it's the captain said, comma, quotation mark, push off, comma, quotation mark, and we did. Number 14, I like old-fashioned donuts. That's just a simple statement of fact. But I don't like old donuts. I don't like fashion donuts. In fact, I don't even know what a fashion donut is. And you wouldn't say I like fashioned and old donuts. So it has to be hyphenated. Old hyphen fashioned donuts. Number 15. The old rundown car was in the barn. Now this is a tricky one. Let's see if you got this one. Was it an old car? Yes. Was it a run car? No. Was it a down car? No. Was it a rundown car? Yes. So now we have an old, comma, run hyphen down car. You see how that works? The old hyphen, or excuse me, old comma, run hyphen down car was in the barn. Number 16. If, what is the word if? It is a subordinating conjunction setting up a dependent clause. At the end of a dependent clause must come a period. 16. If Jesus did not rise from the dead, comma, then our faith is in vain. After, number 17, after, what is the word after? It is a subordinating conjunction setting up a dependent clause. At the end of a dependent clause, introductory dependent clause, comes a comma. After I went to the park, comma, I saw Bill. But notice when we reverse the order of the two clauses, there's no commas there. After I saw Bill, I went to the park. Or excuse me, I saw Bill after I went to the park. Number 19. Excuse me. I came, comma, I saw, comma, I conquered. You could have put periods there. You could have put semicolons there. All of those would have been fine. Number 20. The only key on my keyboard that doesn't print is the letter S. Nothing to do with that sentence. It's completely fine as it's written. Number 21. In June of last year, comma, the kids bought new bikes. Now, why is there a comma here? What is this? In is what? A preposition. Of is also a preposition. When you have two prepositional phrases beginning a sentence, you have to have a comma at the end of it. In June of last year, comma, the kids bought new bikes. Number 22. We can be sure it happened just the way he said it did. That sentence is fine as it is written. No changes. Number 23. Then, as we enter into the final stage of the process, comma, we will see the results. Now this is a little tricky. Where's the subordinating conjunction here? It is the word as. Even though it's not the first word of the sentence, it's still beginning this sentence. So you need a comma at the end. Then as we enter into the final stage of the process, comma, we will see the results. Number 24. See how this cult leader tricked all hyphen American kids into following him. 25. Run for your life, semicolon, the dog is coming. 26. The blue car that has a scratch down the side is his. Nothing to change. The blue 27. The blue car, comma, which has a scratch down the side, comma, is his. 28. In America, we put the periods and commas inside the quotation marks. Anything to change there? Nope. It's fine as it's written. 29. The 10-year-old boy spoke in a low tone in his own defense. He said, I am innocent. Okay, so what do we do with this one? What kind of boy was it? Was it a 10 boy? No. Your boy? No. An old boy? No. It was a 10-year-old boy. So it's a hyphen between the year 10 and year, and hyphen between year and old. And then he said, comma, quotation mark, I am innocent, period, quotation mark. Remember, the period goes inside the quote, the final quotation mark. And then the last one, this is an easily hyphen remembered rule. No, remove the hyphen there because easily is an adverb. So this is an easily remembered rule, no hyphen. Well, if you did well on this, move on to lecture number 2. If you didn't do well, my suggestion is to go back over the tape and develop your vocabulary list for lecture 1, and then take the exam again and go back over this audio lecture and my answers to this quiz, and do it all again, and do it again and again until you get it at 90% or better, and then move on to lecture number 2. I'll see you in lecture number 2.